Hello and welcome to this week's taxation podcast for issue 4292, which will be live from Wednesday the 16th of February and, as usual, in print the following day. I'm Rachel Down and I'm joined by Taxation's Chief Mike Truman.
Hi.
First up, we have Will Silsby's comment piece, Checking It Out, which discusses the alleged flaws within HMRC's proposals for scrutinising business records. So, Mike, do you agree with Will's comments in this piece?
It's an interesting point that he makes, actually, which is that if you've got two people, one of which actually makes mistakes in their... Well, both of them make mistakes in their business records, haven't got very good business records. And with one of them, it leads to a mistake in the accounts as they go in and say tax underpaid, and the other, it leads to the revenue checking their records and imposing a penalty for that. The penalty for making a mistake in your accounts and your tax return can be suspended, but the penalty for the records being wrong isn't, it can't be suspended. So you've got this strange situation. One of them's actually got to the point where they put the wrong figures in and they don't actually have to pay a penalty because it's suspended. The one who hasn't put any accounts in that are wrong yet, but just equally hasn't got the right records, that penalty can't be suspended. So yeah, there's something there that needs looking at.
Yeah.
Particularly in the light of the fact that they're saying they're going to do 50,000-odd business record checks at the end of this year.
Right, so we'll look forward to seeing if anything actually changes.
Whether anything changes, but also I'd be very interested to hear from readers as those checks start to go through what the experience of their clients is.
Yep. So next up we have an investigation-based article by David Hemming, which is aptly named Two Smoking Barrels. Within this, David discusses whether taxpayers have any protection from HMRC taking a second shot in litigation. What does he uncover?
Well, yeah, what he's looking at is the situation where the revenue start an inquiry into something on one particular point. And in this case, the case that they're looking at is the Lachman case. It was all about a share-for-share exchange, and the revenue's original argument as to why they couldn't get share-for-share exchange relief was that they were co-owners of the shares. That was a slightly odd argument. Partway through, the revenue realised there's a much bigger problem, which is that it's not a qualifying trading company. So they've raised the two issues in succession, and the argument was that, you know, that they should have been sticking to the original inquiry. It was a new inquiry once they changed the basis of it, and it was then out of time. That's not going to work, and he says it's not going to work. Right near the end, he points out that the way to stop this and to get it sort of set as to what it is you're looking at is to apply for a closure notice. And we've said this before, and most accountants are very wary of doing this, because it's them going to the commissioners saying, will you please close down this inquiry? And they're just not used to the idea, as commissioners, as the tribunal, they're just not used to the idea that they've got the right to do that. And I think we ought to be doing it more, basically.
Yeah. Right, next we have childcare changes, which is an employment feature where recent revisions in the tax treatment of employer-supported childcare is tackled by Mark Morton. What would you say, Mike, are the main revisions?
Well, it's the main message to get across to people, and it's been weird, this one, because it's been coming for ages, but we haven't had the final sort of approach. And I think because of that, it's not actually had the attention it deserves. Because the big message is, if clients have not yet got a childcare scheme in place, a childcare voucher scheme in place, they need to put one in place before 6th of April. Because if they do, and if employees join it before the 6th of April, then they are protected from then on.
Right.
If they don't do that, or if employees don't join before the 6th of April, then the way that the system is meant to work is that if you're a higher rate taxpayer, you'll get a smaller amount of childcare vouchers that you're allowed to have. And the idea is that you'll get the same effective tax relief as a basic rate taxpayer. Now, it doesn't quite work that way, and it works on the basis of the employer having to make an estimate at the beginning of each tax year for everybody in the scheme of what their taxable salary is going to be. And employers really need to be told about that. They've got to make that decision at the beginning of 6th April 2011 for anyone who did not join the scheme before that.
Right.
So, okay, first time round it won't be too much of a problem, but as people join, you've got to make this estimate, and unless they know what they're doing, then potentially they've got problems.
So they've just got a couple of months then to
yeah, exactly.
get into gear.
A couple of months to get the scheme up. But getting these schemes up and running is really dead easy. There's so little formality about it. And accountants who haven't got into it, I mean, you can go to scheme providers, but frankly, it's just as easy to provide something for the employers yourself or for the employer to provide it themselves. It's dead easy to do.
Right, so our last feature is titled For Better for or for Worse, which, as well as being nicely in keeping with the Valentine's theme this week, Julie Cameron also considers the differences in application of old and new incorrect return penalties. What does Julie discuss?
Well, she's giving us several practical examples of what the old regime should provide and what the new regime should provide. But as she says, there's been a tendency in the first year or so of this regime for everything to still gravitate towards what's known as the soggy middle. I mean, the idea of the new regime was that you'd have much more differentiated penalties. If it was a comparatively minor thing where it's careless, then the penalty, and particularly if you came forward quickly and you cooperated quickly, then the penalty would be really quite low. If, on the other hand, it's deliberate, then the penalty would start at quite a high level and would get even higher if you didn't come forward and explain quickly. What she says is that there's quite a lot of evidence that the revenue are still wary of arguing deliberate.
Yeah.
And that's always been the case. They've never tried to argue deliberate or the previous versions of that, unless really pushed, which in a sense is a shame. The whole point about this new scheme was particularly that we knew everything was heading towards the soggy middle, and really we wanted to differentiate. And it sounds strange to be suggesting that the revenue should impose higher penalties, but I mean it is probably true that they need to bite the bullet and actually argue for this scheme to work the way that they'd intended it to work.
Is there a light at the end of the tunnel for HMRC's like clamp down penalty?
I think the business records check, you know, you think, well, that's going to be a bit problematic. I'm not one who thinks that they're trying to raise money through penalties. I think they are trying to change behaviour through penalties. And I think until they actually see behaviours change, then there won't be, you know, that sort of light. There's no light at the end of the tunnel for the person who just is not prepared to keep their records up to date and isn't prepared to send things, do things properly. It's got to be done properly, and that's what the revenue are looking for. I think there genuinely is a light at the end of the tunnel for those who are trying, but who, because we've got such a complex tax code, occasionally make mistakes. I think there's much greater awareness now that that's not something to stamp down on so heavily.
Finally, Taxation's Right to Reply campaign has already, just 3 weeks in, stirred up some response from our readers. Could you update us on the progress?
Yeah, response from the readers, no response from the minister yet, which is, but I think I'm probably going to start a time clock on the website from the date that I sent him the letter to, you know, wait until he actually replies. We've had three or four letters in now from readers. I mean, do please, if you do what I ask you to do, which is to send a copy of our Right to Reply article to your MP, adding on your own views and asking him to get in touch with David Gawke. If you do that, please do send a copy to us as well. And we've had some amazing letters about the sorts of delays and the sorts of problems that people have had. We've printed three of them this week. Another couple have come in, one or two that don't want to be named, which is fair enough, I fully understand. One that came in today where somebody's been trying to get an answer for 18 months. I mean, it just, and hasn't had an answer at all, not even anything really much of a holding reply. So, yeah, it really is something that needs to be sorted out. We will keep on at it, but we do need your help, because what will make this work is people writing to their MPs with their own personal responses and asking their MPs to get in touch with David Gawke.
Yep, definitely. Right, well, that's brought us to the end of this week's podcast. As always, thank you, Mike, for your insight, and to you, the listeners, for staying tuned.
Cheers, now.
Bye.